content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, my name is Tara, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. In today's episode of Education Today, we'll be exploring an article entitled Agriculture Education for Students with Visual Impairments, Cultivating Excellence and Exceeding Expectations. This article comes from the Visual Impairment and Deafblind Education Quarterly, Volume 70, Issue Number 3. The article was written by Tiffany Wild from The Ohio State University and Kaylee Mitchell, Alabama School for the Blind. I, first author, grew up in a very small town in rural Ohio. I was always a member of 4-H, and many of my friends were in the Future Farmers of America program. Both organizations provide opportunities to youth to engage in agriculture education, along with many other projects in science, technology, engineering, home economics, communication, leadership, and so much more. My own daughters are now in the program, and I've been working with my local 4-H educators to help with making their programs more accessible for those with disabilities. However, with my love of 4-H and my passion for making science accessible for students with visual impairments, I knew that I needed to learn about accessible agriculture education. I knew agriculture programs are perfect for students, but how do we bring these programs to students with visual impairments? What do we need to keep in mind when working with them? A search online and in our libraries found one article, and it was not even written in the U.S. I knew we had to do better. I started reaching out to the field and asking about agriculture education programs at specialized schools for the blind. Many people had not heard of such a thing. Then I ran into a friend, Dan Kelly, at the Ohio American Council for the Blind annual conference. He told me about an amazing program in Alabama where students were engaged in an agriculture program. Fast forward, I was able to meet Kaylee Mitchell, second author, a 10th grade physical science teacher and agri-science teacher for the Alabama State for the School for the Blind, ASB, which is part of the Alabama Institute for the Deaf and Blind, AIDB. Ms. Mitchell is also a 4-H volunteer and runs 4-H club meetings at the school so that her students can participate in projects and competitions along with their peers. Her students breed, raise, and show bantam chickens. They are involved in the process from hatch to show. In fact, one of the chickens shown from the school received champion and reserve champion, while another received fourth best in show. In addition, the students tend to crops, ranging from tomatoes to corn. Other projects that the students are involved in include baking, graphic design, photography, public speaking, gardening, and woodworking. And there are images of the students preparing for the exhibitions. We'll skip ahead. After learning more about the students' projects, I wanted to know more about Ms. Mitchell and her program. Ms. Mitchell had an agriculture background working with chickens, goats, and horses. She was a middle school science teacher when her friend, Ms. Rachel Chastain at the Helen Keller School, made her aware of a retirement happening in the AG program at ASB. Ms. Chastain thought of Ms. Mitchell and encouraged her to apply. Ms. Mitchell commented that she had no idea of what it would be like teaching agriculture to students with visual impairments and was intimidated at first, but was excited to have the opportunity to make a change in the lives of those with visual impairments. With a willing attitude toward learning and her passion for agriculture, Ms. Mitchell became the next agriculture teacher at ASB. She had to take additional certification exams, get an additional master's degree in teaching students with visual impairments, and become a 4-H volunteer, all in order to ensure that she was properly credentialed and ready to teach at ASB. She was blessed with supportive administrators and an experienced teacher's aide, Judy Barber, to help her transition to her new position. She says she could not have done everything she has done without the support of her admins, aides, co-workers, and fellow agri-science teachers at the AIDB campuses. And ASB students are fully immersed in agricultural experiences in both the classroom and a working farm, the Joe Tom Armbrester Agriculture Center that they share with the faculty and students from other AIDB campuses. Ms. Mitchell said that in both environments, safety is considered at all times. Students must be given an orientation of safety before they begin working in the classroom or the farm. Students are required to sign safety contracts and pass a safety quiz before engaging in the curriculum and activities at the farm. Ms. Mitchell reiterated over and over about the importance of safety when working with students with visual impairments in agricultural education experiences. She spoke of the need to be aware of hazards. This ranged from leaving garden hose and rakes out to be stepped on to garden hoses impeding walkways for cane users. Specific hazards include A, tool safety. Students should be given opportunities to use power tools. They must be given safety goggles to wear and be shown how to handle the tools properly before they can run them on their own. All tools must be labeled with print and braille and have a proper location for storage that does not change. This way students know where to access and put away their tools upon completion of a project. B. Cages. Students need to be reminded to close cages of their birds when getting them out to clean the cage or handle the bird. The corners of poultry cages are sharp and can scratch or poke a peer as they walk by. These cages are elevated so a cane will not detect them. Keeping the cage doors closed allows for peers to pass by to access other chickens in the barn. C. Elevated objects. Be mindful of objects that are naturally elevated, such as cabinets, stored tractor elements that have sharp blades or teeth at an elevated level. You can try to mark them with bright tape for those with low vision to see, but a teacher can also reinforce the protective hand as students move around the barn and farm fields. Ms. Mitchell stresses the importance of teaching students to move with a protective hand near their face when on the farm to shield them from all the tools and equipment that could poke or scratch their face. D. Animal hazards. Animals have sharp beaks, claws, can bite, and may have horns. When working with the chickens, it may be appropriate to wear rubber gloves when handling them to avoid getting the hands scratched. Also, a sighted guide should be used with larger animals so that the students know where the head or possible horns are located on the animal and the proximity to the animal. E. Chemical exposure. Fertilizers, herbicides, insecticides, and pesticides are all on the farm. These can be toxic. All students should be provided with an overview of the chemicals, how to properly use them, and what to do if there's a spill. All chemicals should be labeled in braille and in large print. Gloves can also be used to reduce exposure during application. Ms. Mitchell believes that agricultural programs cover several career tech areas such as plant science, animal science, environmental science, carpentry, plumbing, electrical, and automotive engineering, etc. In my opinion, we should strive to make it as hands-on as possible, but not at the expense of safety. While safety is the number one concern, the next is making accommodations for the curriculum. Ms. Mitchell says, I allow all students to try new tasks regardless of visual status. However, she notes that few ag settings are accommodating, so she teaches using direct instruction on how to navigate and work in an agricultural setting. Accommodations for his students include, but are not limited to, safety glasses and goggles that can fit over prescribed lenses, leather gloves for animal handling, rubber gloves for cleaning cages, tactile and high contrast maps of work areas, high contrast equipment, organized supply bins that are labeled in braille in large print, tool storage clearly labeled, and orientation and mobility using self-protective techniques. Assistive technology is also used with braille measuring cups talking scales, talking calculators and thermometers, talking measure, tape measure, braille, and large print textbooks or manuals. Pix Blaster for making tactile images, magnification devices, and refreshable braille or use of an iPad for taking notes. With all these accommodations in place, students can thrive in an agricultural setting. An additional accommodation that has been used in crop production is the use of raised beds. This allows for the students to stand at the bed to work on weeding and watering instead of bending over and searching for the plants in a field. In addition, Ms. Mitchell uses a black felt liner material in her beds to ensure that students with low vision can have contrast to better see the green plants. While it may be challenging in the Alabama heat, with some water and love, the plants can thrive at ASB. With all the recent successes of her students in both livestock and non-livestock projects, I asked Ms. Mitchell about the plans that are in place to promote student inclusion in their 4-H projects and at their various livestock shows. Ms. Mitchell spoke highly of the 4-H agent in her county, Ms. Kim Good, as being an advocate in the 4-H programs the students participate in. Ms. Good speaks with all the competition judges and provides materials in large print or braille, or voiceover the material if needed. However, if with these accommodations, the students themselves are responsible for completing the project. In livestock shows, they are required to be in control over the animal and still need to perform the same show tasks that their peers perform. For example, if in the local chicken shows, the youth are required to prepare and place their animals into their own cage, the difference, a sighted guide is allowed to help the exhibitors locate their cage, but cannot help any exhibitor to cage or carry the bird. Ms. Mitchell says she has always felt welcomed by the show committees, and they are getting known the more they travel around and show, with many happy faces cheering her students. While the accommodations are important, one cannot help but think of all the life lessons being learned by Ms. Mitchell's students. Through her curriculum, she is teaching academic skills such as measuring water volume, gathering data, and the life cycle of animals, the life cycle of plants, making models to better understand the world around you, and so much more. Then I begin to think of the expanded core curriculum. Every area of the expanded core could be touched on almost daily by lessons taught under the guidance of an agricultural curriculum. For example, assistive technology. Students are using their assistive technology to gather data, make observations, and access different information for projects they work on in class. Career exploration. Students are exploring a number of agricultural careers, which can also involve careers in other areas, business, marketing, art, communications, engineering, trades, etc. Compensatory skills. Writing down observations and data collected is one way in which these skills are being practiced every day. Students may also use and create tactile models or diagrams. Independent living skills. While some students take baking and home economics projects through their 4-H organization, the very act of being on the farm and taking care to clean up after the animals, clean messes made, and cultivate food for others to eat encompasses this area. Orientation and mobility skills. Navigating the farm and agriculture class is a daily lesson in orientation and mobility and self-protective techniques. Things get moved or changed when more than one school is accessing the farm. Therefore, these skills are called upon to help the students safely navigate their environments. Recreation and leisure skills. Some students knit or crochet in Ms. Mitchell's class and make artistic items for all to enjoy, while others gravitate toward plant propagation, aquaponics, caretaking, animals, or baking. Students are exploring activities that they like and are advocating for their interests. They're finding the leisurely activities they enjoy through this class. Self-determination. Ms. Mitchell prides herself on having her students advocate for their needs on the farm and in the classroom. She puts the ownership on them to voice what they need for their projects or individualized learning. Sensory efficiency. This skill is practiced every day when students are avoiding hazards. Students are taught to use their senses to help them navigate the farm and hazards that may exist. They are also learning to identify items by touch, such as distinguishing a pepper from a squash, a drill from an impact power tool, or a silky chicken from a Polish chicken. Social skills. Students who are competing in 4-H or presenting projects to the class are practicing skills in public speaking. Group projects are used to guide students to think like a team and practice good social skills. I'd like to go back and say it was a silky chicken or a Polish chicken, a Polish chicken, excuse me. please forgive me. As you see, there are many benefits to having an agriculture program. Not only are science and math embedded into the curriculum that is taught, but students also have a chance to practice all of the expanded core curriculum areas embedded into the curriculum. What a powerful program and opportunity for the students at ASB. Are you sold yet? Do you want to start an agricultural education program for your students or get them engaged in a local 4-H club? I asked Ms. Mitchell what advice she would give to others wanting to establish their own agriculture programs. She said she understood the intimidation of others, but to not let fear cause exclusion of any student with visual impairments or blindness. She acknowledged that they can, within reason, do anything other students can do. They may just have to do them a little bit differently or with a little more instruction. Additional time and organization may be needed, but we could all use that in life. Our students with visual impairments may require a one-on-one guide or sighted student to help with higher risk activities, but we all have needed that guidance in our lives. She stresses the importance of capitalizing on the strengths of the students and their abilities and interests, having students be self-advocates for their needs and act accordingly. Ms. Mitchell also stresses the importance of using free resources in the community and working collaboratively. Recommendations for starting an agri-science program. Decide how funding will be sourced. Agriculture programs can get expensive fast. Reach out to other AG teachers and extension staff to build connections and request advice or assistance. Begin small and use what you have. Indoor plant systems such as grow carts can teach the same concept as an outdoor garden. Do not feel pressured to add a greenhouse from the start. Work your way up or focus on smaller projects. If you plan to hatch chickens, build/purchase the brooder and coop first and establish a funding plan to feed them before you dive in. Do not feel pressured to make everything 100% accessible. Students must also learn how to adapt to real-world scenarios, so find a balance that works for your students. It will be a continuous work in progress for both you and them. Remember, students with visual impairments can participate in agriculture, so they might bump into a table and knock over a watering glass or trip over a hose on the side of the barn. I assure you that every farmer has done that. The trick is to react calmly and teach students how to avoid those situations in the future. With all that can go wrong in this world, practicing life skills on a farm, in a farm setting, teaches skills and traits that will be in the, with the student forever. Agricultural education and 4-H programs are an amazing way to engage students with visual impairments in programs that support lifelong skills and make wonderful long-term memories along the way. Agriculture is a great way to teach the expanded core curriculum for the visually impaired. It also opens up many new opportunities for students and gives them experiences that they will likely have nowhere else. Students with visual impairments can fully participate in the programs with a few minor accommodations along the way. Safety is a bit of a concern, but with planning and proper training, students with visual impairments are no more in danger than their peers. As an alum of a 4-H program, I hope that all students get the ability to participate in an agricultural program. Again, that article came from the Visual Impairment and Deafblind Education Quarterly, Volume 70, Issue Number 3. We have time for another article. This one comes from USA Today, and it's called How Will Education Department Layoffs Affect Special Ed 504 Plans, IEPs? Education department layoffs threaten special ed system, advocate warns. From 540 plans to IEPs, there are many protections in place at the local level to ensure students with disabilities get the resources they need. But federal oversight is a key piece of that puzzle. Families and educators across the country were plunged into a state of uncertainty over the weekend after the Federal Education Department laid off practically every staffer in the government's Special Education Division. Nearly the entire Office of Special Education and Rehabilitative Services, including the Office of Special Education Programs, was let go, according to agency employees and their union. Employees in the Education Department's Office for Civil Rights, many of whom work to protect students with disabilities from discrimination, were also laid off, the union said. The divisions included offices in the District of Columbia, Seattle, and Atlanta. The Education Department still has not officially confirmed the specifics of the layoff. Agency spokespeople, many of them furloughed because of the government shutdown, have not responded to requests for comment. The cuts, which have been challenged in court, come as part of an effort by the Trump administration to pressure congressional Democrats to end the shutdown, which is approaching its third week with few plausible off-ramps. The layoffs created widespread trepidation over the future of federal oversight of special education programs, as well as the billions of dollars in funding that states and schools are entitled to receive. In recent days, advocates stressed that multiple layers of supervision of that money are needed to ensure students with disabilities can access resources to learn safely and effectively. For decades, the office with those responsibilities employed robust teams. They were largely spared from the first round of major education department cuts in March. However, Denise Marshall, CEO of the Council of Parent Attorneys and Advocates, a national advocacy group for students with disabilities, said that after this weekend, you can count them on one hand. How do the staffing losses affect services for children? To be clear, no federal civil rights laws have changed. Students with disabilities are still legally entitled to a free, appropriate public education, a standard created by the half-century-old landmark law known as the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA. Through that law, Congress remains required to pick up the tab for a portion of the average per pupil cost for special education, spending billions of dollars each year. The difference after the firings is that the people and the systems in charge of doing those things have been upended. IDEA still exists, wrote Lisa Leitner, a special education advocate and lobbyist, in a blog post October 12th. But the people who used to help enforce it, most, if not all, waiting for the final count of them, were just laid off. That means fewer eyes watching the states, less technical assistance, fewer resources. The law didn't go anywhere, she said, but our backup did. Parents need to take notice, warned Katie Neese, a former high-ranking official in the Education Department's Special Education Division. The whole reason we have federal special education law is because states wouldn't educate students with disabilities, she told USA Today. This is a time when parents have to really saddle up and be ready to be the most aggressive advocate for their children that they've ever been. What about IEPs, 405 plans? Parents of students with disabilities, of which there are millions in the United States, are often familiar with a couple of key terms. An individualized education program, or IEP, is one of them. The other is a Section 504 plan. Both are similar types of blueprints that, at no cost to parents, ensure students with disabilities in K-12 schools get the resources and accommodations they need. Rest assured, 504 plans and IEPs aren't going away, though they're required by federal laws, they're implemented at the local level. Here's the problem. Not every school follows the law correctly. Sometimes that's because of discrimination. Other times it's because educators don't always understand what special education laws require of them. Take one example. In Wyoming, when a school was delaying an IEP meeting for a kindergartner who used a wheelchair, the Education Department's Office for Civil Rights stepped in. Without the agency's intervention, that student wouldn't have gone to school, said Catherine Lyman, who helmed the division for many years. Historically, over decades, families have been able to come to the federal government and get relief without hiring an attorney, she told USA Today. These cuts ensure that no family can rely on that. Still, families should continue to file civil rights complaints with the Education Department if they believe their child is being discriminated against, advocates say. Said, states also have educational agencies with avenues to report suspected civil rights violations. And we are just about out of time today, so we'll skip ahead to nearly the end of this article. The last section is IDEA funding already disbursed. The people who originally disbursed the money and those who would traditionally help troubleshoot problems for states and school districts appear to be gone. It's not clear whether states are immediately prepared to deal with what comes next or what the Education Department's broader plan is going forward. Historically, special education divisions at the state level have been subject to stress and turnover, LaVore said. For years, the Education Department's special education office was different. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Education Today. Please be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed the show. I'm Tara for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. You can listen to and share Education Today as a podcast, now available on our website, ncreadingservice.com. If you have any comments or questions from today's episode or wish to share a topic that you'd like us to explore, call 919-832-5138. You may also email us at ncreadingservice.org. We look forward to hearing from you. So long till next time.